As Brother David mentioned, this will be the final lesson in our Why series. And the topic that I've been given is Why God? And within that category, there were several different ways that I looked at how this particular topic could be taken. Why God versus other secular gods, or why the God of the New Testament and versus, you know, why we serve the God of the New Testament and why we believe that versus the God of the Old Testament, and Christianity versus Judaism, and different aspects. But I decided to go with why God is, as far as a creator, versus the evolution and the Big Bang theory that is prevalent today. So a more accurate title may be why, could be creator versus, I guess, the Big Bang, maybe. And as we go through this, I'd like for us to recognize that a lot of times Christians, we look at science and we look at a lot of the theories that are put out there, and we maybe get a little jaded towards science. I think that all these scientists are all non-believers, and science, somebody thinks some things aren't real. And I'd like to clarify that science is very much real, and there's probably just as many scientists and physicists that believe in a creator than those who do not believe in one. Just because it's a scientifically stated fact does not mean that it comes from a source that doesn't believe in God, or that it is incorrect. I believe sometimes that is the what some people think. I know in the past I have with some things as well, but there are many seemingly more every day, especially if you believe mainstream media, those who profess to have no religion. The faith in a divine creator is ridiculous, and that mathematics and science hold all the answers that we could ask of this universe, our existence in it, and the morality of mankind. To ask such questions is only human for us to do so. Where do we come from? Why are we here? What comes after this? How are we to live our lives? These questions no doubt have lived in the human mind for most of history. And man comes to wildly varying conclusions on these various topics. In our society today, it seems that man has turned to science and human logic, and sometimes not even that. That's what's professed to be, to try and answer these questions. And if someone were to suggest religion as a point of reference on these matters, you may be laughed at by many. The world, if you were to investigate the wide range of religious beliefs and practices, even within one specific religion itself, the world seems to have decided that no one religion has all the truth. There's too much of a wide range of religion. Each may have a part of the truth, or may have a few good ideas, but there is no absolute truth in religion. It seems to be how the world views it. The absence of belief in religion, that religion contains truth, is a hurdle that we must overcome when trying to save the lost, especially those who do not have a background in, have no religious background at all. Another is that many make claims that the existence of evil in the world proves that there is no God. Also, it's widely considered probable by many in the scientific community that the theory of evolution has removed the possibility or the need for God, and that only what we can be proved by science and be observed in a laboratory can be considered a truth claim. Some may use the emotional argument that Christianity specifically is very exclusive, and that the doctrine of eternal hell for everyone but you cannot be correct. That's unfair. And then many choose not to believe in God or any religion at all because they do not want to be under the authority of anyone else. So let us decide for ourselves. In 2 Timothy 2:15, we are to rightly divide the word of truth. In this passage in context is speaking of Timothy understanding the truth of the word of, that is the word of God. But I believe that we can take this idea with us on our journey to understanding the truth of what not only the Bible says, but also what science says. Sometimes Genesis 1 is not enough for someone who was not raised in the Christian faith. And that is what it requires to some degree. It is faith. So let us see which requires which of these various. We'll look at a few different faiths here and see which one requires more faith. Now, I will say again on the outset, given the type of lesson that this is, I do have scripture in here, but a lot of this is based in scientific literature. I've read from a few different books and studied a few places, and this is not your typical lesson that we give from the pulpit. I do believe it is important, though, and I know it can be rather technical. I've tried my best to consolidate it and to make it as understandable as possible. And for me, I really enjoyed this study. I know it may not be everyone's cup of tea, but I do believe it's important not only to strengthen our own faith, but also to give us hopefully some information that we can use in our day-to-day lives. But a few definitions to help us understand some of the words or phrases we may use in the study. One word is theist. If you're not aware of what that word is, this would be someone who believes that there is a God and that God created the universe. Also, that God in particular is not that he is separate from the universe. This would be Christianity, Judaism, Islam would be under this category. That God is the painter and his creation is the painting, that is the universe. Next, we have pantheist. This belief would be that there is a God, but God literally is the universe itself. This would encompass some forms of Buddhism and some forms of Hinduism as well. That God is the painter and also he is the painting. Then there is atheism, the main one we will look at today. These all being faiths, the theist faith, the pantheist faith, and then this is a faith, the faith of the atheist, that there is no God, there is only a painting. And then there is the agnostic, who believes that there is a God, there is a painting, but they are unsure of how it got there. There are levels of faith required for any of these worldviews, including atheism and pantheism. And we as humans do not have all the answers, so we must work with what we have and draw our own conclusion from that. We have our historical records, we have science, and we have the Bible. And from these, we can draw what information that we can, and then on faith, we make our judgment. With atheism, it is the same. They have historical data, the same as ours. They have scientific data as well, the same as ours, and the Bible. And they draw their conclusions as well. And also, I'd like to make a statement that as Christians, when you're discussing with someone who may be an atheist or agnostic, and they demand from you to see proof of what you believe, that we demand proof from them as well. The atheistic faith has done a great job in making it seem as if they have all the answers, and it is on the Christian to show unconditional proof and evidence of what they believe. All the while they have, I believe, and what we will show as well, less evidence and masquerade as all-knowing intellectuals. As a Christian, we must turn to them to say, now show me your proof of what you believe. There's a lot of information around this topic. We're not going to attempt to cover everything that we could possibly mention. We won't go into a lot of depth on many of the things. If you are interested in this more, I would recommend the book, I Do Not Have Enough Faith to Be an Atheist, of which I used varying portions of this as an outline for this study, as also as a few of the writings by the late Ravi Zacharias as well. But 1 Peter chapter 3 and verse 15 says, always be ready to give a defense to everyone who asks you a reason for the hope that is in you. So with this in our minds, move on to the first portion of the lesson. That is, how was the universe created? And this is, we'll go over the so-called proof of the Big Bang, the scientific facts surrounding it. In 1915, Albert Einstein came forward with the theory of general relativity. We will not get into all the specifics of it, but suffice to say that what he's discovered showed scientific mathematic proof that there was a beginning of time, of space, and of matter, all things in the universe. And it proved that the universe was expanding in such a way that at some point all things, if you were to rewind it back far enough, would theoretically have come together at one point. That was what his theory proposed. And at that point at that point where everything came together is when everything began. And Einstein did not like what he had discovered with his theory. Einstein believed the universe was static, and it was eternal. He did not believe in a creator. He believed the universe was eternal and had always been there. It always existed, had no beginning. And his theory disproved his own view. And Einstein's quoting is calling his own discovery irritating because it disproved what he had long held as fact. So he, whether on purpose or by error, introduced a cosmological constant, an error in his algebraic equation that wouldn't be found for a couple of years, but it would allow him to hold on to his idea of a static universe for some time. But eventually it was found out, and it was proven mathematically that the universe had a beginning. And then some years later, Einstein would go to Mount Wilson from the Hubble telescope, and he would observe for himself through the telescope there in California that the universe was expanding. This is what his theory had predicted, and then it was visually observed and proven through the telescope. And after this, he was a self-admitted believer in a creator. He seems to have been more of a pantheist, believed that God, he believed God was indeed the universe itself, but he could not deny this, what science and mathematics and his own eyes had proven to him. And the fact that everything had a beginning proved to him that there was a creator. So if a thing has a beginning, then it has a cause. If there is an effect, then something has caused it. And this idea, this truth, has a scientific law named after it, and it is named the law of causality. And science itself is impossible without this law. Atheists had never needed a cause for the beginning of the universe. Just as Albert Einstein had, they believed that it always had been in existence. It was static. It was eternal. Until Einstein's theory. At which point they had a dilemma. Now their science and mathematics have proven that there was a beginning. And because of the law of causality, everything that has an effect, there has a beginning, has a cause. They needed something to be make their beginning. And that thing could not be a creator. So they come up with the Big Bang. And under the Big Bang, there's an acronym we can look at that for them that shows their proof of the Big Bang. Acronym is SURGE. And the S in SURGE is the second law of thermodynamics, is what this stands for. And along with a lot of other things, one of the ideas the second law of thermodynamics states is the universe is running out of usable energy. And the first law stating that there is a finite amount of energy in the universe. The universe does not gain more energy, so if there is only a certain amount and we are running out of it, then naturally there was a beginning. The universe cannot have been in existence for an infinitely long time because, like a flashlight left on, it would have run out of energy by now. The universe cannot be infinitely old. And so this, for their want for proof of the Big Bang, it proves that there was a beginning of the universe, this law. So their first letter, SURGE, it proves there was a beginning scientifically, but their first letter doesn't actually prove a Big Bang. It just proves there was a beginning. So to this point, they still need their own level of faith to jump to that conclusion. The U in SURGE stands for the universe, and the universe is expanding. You recall Einstein's theory of general relativity we mentioned a moment ago that predicted the universe was expanding, and Edwin Hubble's telescope was then required to prove that it was expanding. It was observed with the human eye. This also proves that there was a beginning. If we can see the universe expanding, then it had to have a beginning. According to the observations and the mathematics around it, that would go over definitely my head, and I imagine most of our heads, if you were able to watch the universe expansion on a videotape or rewind it back, this is taking into account, this is the Big Bang theory. You rewind it back, and it would then rewind down to a point not the size of a basketball or a tennis ball or a golf ball, or even the head of a pen, that it would come down to a point that is mathematically nothing. It would come down to a point where there was literally nothing there. In other words, to a point where there was no space, there was no time, there was no matter. This is possibly where the idea of the Big Bang came from. There was nothing, and then bang, there was something. And this is where atheists start to have some more trouble. Once shown the universe is expanding and has a starting point, they pivot from being an eternal universe to there was a bang and it all was there. But once you consider that by their own scientific discoveries, that nothing was there before that event, not even time, not matter, there's no space, then they have even more problems explaining how that happened. They still have scientifically proven there was a beginning, but they haven't proven their own case yet. Thus needing, with every letter and acronym, needing more faith themselves to believe their own hypothesis. The R in SURGE stands for the radiation from the Big Bang, or the afterglow, as some call it. It's a very technical item in the acronym, and I'll not attempt once again to go into deep detail on it because I couldn't. But there's a very faint, specific type and amount of radiation that can be detected. And it is assumed by scientists that this is from the Big Bang. It is undoubtedly there. It is a real thing. It can be detected and measured. And this afterglow is supposed to have originated from the explosion of the Big Bang, and the ripples are still able to be measured today. Now, scientifically, there is no other explanation for this besides an explosion of energy, something as massive as the Big Bang that took place some time ago. It's the only physical thing, only natural explanation that they can come up with, unless, of course, you believe in a creator. But it can be scientifically proven that it is there, this radiation, but it cannot be scientifically proven what the exact source is. Is there an assumption, another jump in their faith required to believe their faith claim? The G stands for great galaxy seeds. And this one, once again, it's all very technical things here, but the Big Bang theory presumed that if there was a Big Bang, then there should be observable differences in the temperature of the background radiation in space. I don't really know what that means, and I imagine most of us don't either, but it's something that can be measured in space with very very high-powered and precision equipment. So in 1989, NASA launched a $200 million satellite with this equipment on it, and one of the missions that it would undertake would be to check for these ripples in the cosmic radiation. And they checked for it, and they found it. And it wasn't just points in space, but there are infrared pictures of these ripples, these waves, this background radiation. And there's a lot more to this we won't go into, but there are a couple points I'd like to make from this. One, the fact that the Big Bang theory predicted that they would find this makes them even more rooted in their belief that it was real. The fact that it predicted it doesn't mean that it's real, but it did predict it, and so they are even more staunch in their beliefs. But number two, one thing this led to the understanding of was the rate that the universe is expanding, as we mentioned, is a fact, is expanding. But the way that the rate that it's expanding is so precise that it allows for the gravitational pull, allows for matter to be pulled together into galaxies. If the universe expanded too fast, nothing would come together and everything, all the planets and everything would fling out. They wouldn't rotate around each other. Nothing would come together. If it was too little, it would collapse back on itself. So the universe is extremely finely tuned to perfection. And then we're met with the dilemma of choosing whether it's by design or if it's sheer chance out of chaos. And here we see, I believe, easily where, once again, the proponents of the Big Bang Theory need more faith to prop up their ideals. I don't believe anyone would agree that an explosion brings about precision and the aftermath of an explosion, anything of this magnitude can bring about anything as precise as our universe. But that is what is proposed from this. The final letter in Surge E stands for Einstein's theory of general relativity, which we've touched on a moment ago. And this is the main reason for the Big Bang theories being proposed in the first place, because it demands a beginning of the universe, a beginning where matter and space, because if you had matter but no space, you would have nowhere to put it, and also time, because if you had matter and space, but where would you put it if there was no time yet? Or if you had space and time but no matter, there would be no need for time because there was nothing to put an age to. All things, according to this theory of Einstein's, proves that all three had to come into existence at the same time. And this, once again, proves a dilemma, because they must then decide how it all came to be when nothing existed for no amount of time and no amount of space before then. The late Robert Jastrow, who was an astronomer, a planetary physicist, he was the first chairman of NASA's Lunar Exploration Committee, former chief of NASA's theoretical division, founding director of NASA's Goddard Institute for Space Studies, and among other things, was an agnostic, which we mentioned earlier means that he did not believe in God, but he did not believe in God. He was unsure. But he said this once in an interview. He said, "Astronomers now find they have painted themselves into a corner because they have proven by their own methods that the world began abruptly, an act of creation to which you can trace the seeds of every star, every planet, every living thing in this cosmos and on the earth. And they have found that all this happened as a product of forces they cannot hope to discover. There are what I or anyone would call supernatural forces at work is now, I think, a scientifically proven fact." So why is this so important? Why would this physicist and many others draw the conclusion that supernatural forces are to be the cause of this? Why could natural forces, as we've been told, not have done this on their own? Well, since all of nature, that is time, space, and matter, and all the laws of physics that envelop time, space, and matter, that is nature, all came into existence at the same time, and since we've established that every effect has a cause, then whatever caused the effect of all the universe we brought into creation must stand outside of those things. It must stand outside of matter and space and time. It must stand outside of nature. It must be literally supernatural. So we have looked at the basis for the Big Bang Theory, and if you were to weigh the two out, the universe having a creator seems more reasonable than an explosion of nothing for no reason that created everything. But there have been many attempts to come up with other theories to try and disprove the need for a creator. For the sake of time, we will not dive into many of these, but they are, once again, overly complicated. Some literally make no sense, but they all have the same fate, and they fail to make the mark. One of these is the cosmic rebound theory, which proposes the universe has exploded and expanded and contracted repeatedly for however long until the perfect explosion happened, and then for some reason it stopped, and then everything happened. But there is no evidence for this, and science actually proves otherwise. Stephen Hawking himself had another theory that some have coined as the imaginary time theory, and it is about as ridiculous as the name given to it, but it is self-admitted by himself, a proposal that concludes that all scientific, that is basically made up, and Hawking himself concludes that all scientific data points to a specific point where all things came into existence at once. So his theory, he even said himself, it's not real. He just, I guess, decided to make one up. The scientific evidence that we have looked at for Surge is what points to the universe having a beginning. Atheists say that this is the Big Bang, and theists, that would be Christians, those who believe in God, believe that was when God created the universe. Some still hypothesize the universe being eternal, having no beginning, but that history goes back an infinite number of days. And there are many reasons that this is not the case. And once again, we can't cover them all, but I'll look at one briefly just so we can touch on this, the idea of having an eternal universe. According to science, lead is the after product of a specific form of uranium, and that has decayed for what science proposed about 9 million years. This form of uranium, which is a radioactive substance, will decompose until it becomes lead. If the universe and the Earth itself is infinite, then how do we still have uranium on our Earth today? There would be no uranium left by their own volition, their own research. We would have only lead in its place. And that's just one simple way. There are lots more technical ways to go about proving that, but the universe is not indefinitely old. It definitely has a beginning. But the skeptic may say, okay then, so we can prove the universe has a beginning, is not infinite. We would say yes. You also say that all things have a beginning and that every effect has a cause. So that we'd all say yes. So how do you account for the existence of God? Who created God? Well, that's where faith comes in, doesn't it? The universe is eternal, which we know is not true. Something outside the universe that is eternal had to have created it. And that's not a religious philosophy. That is evidence and reason. That is the logical conclusion to be drawn from the information that they have and what we have looked at thus far. Next, we look at how finely tuned the Earth is, how precise it is. Not only the universe, but the Earth itself is immensely complex. It is set to such a precision that any number of seemingly insignificant alterations would mean that it could not function, could not be sufficient for life, and the Earth may not even exist at all. There are many of these. They're called anthropic constants. I believe there's 122 of them. We will look at a couple of those very briefly. One of those is the oxygen in Earth's atmosphere. It is approximately 21% oxygen in the atmosphere, and if it were off by roughly 4% either way, we would either suffocate or there would be constant fire eruptions from the increase of oxygen in Earth's atmosphere. Either way, could not sustain life. The moon and Earth gravitational reach. The moon, if it were had less gravitational pull on Earth, it would cause climactic instability. And if it had more pull, then the rotational period would be too severe. Both would mean they couldn't have life on the Earth. Same with CO2 levels. If they were any higher or lower, it would be impossible to live on Earth. We either suffocate or we'd burn up. The centrifugal force of the rotation, balancing the gravitational force of the sun, keeps us in orbit and keeps us from either flying away from the sun or being pulled into the sun and burning up. The planet Jupiter, in its particular orbit that it is in, pulls most of the space debris that comes through our solar system to it that may normally come in contact with Earth because of how large it is and where it is in the rotation around the sun. The Earth's crust itself, thicker or thinner, would, because of the amount of oxygen that it actually absorbs, would cause there not to be no life on Earth. One that I found very interesting was lightning itself. I did not realize this, but when we have lightning occur in our atmosphere, it actually breaks down the nitrogen in the atmosphere to a level that can be absorbed by our soil and then used by the plants. Lightning also causes the loss of 5 to 10 million acres of forest due to forest fires every year. But if the lightning we had much more lightning than we currently have, then all the forests would be burned up because of too much lightning. And if there was too little lightning, there would be enough nitrogen in the soil to support plant life, and we would suffocate from lack of oxygen anyways. Even to the point, which is so amazing to me, all these little things, I know I may be boring a lot of you, but I find it very interesting. The distance between stars in our galaxy is suppose there are roughly 100 billion stars in our galaxy alone, and between any two stars, there's roughly 30 trillion miles. And if they were any closer or further apart, it would affect the planetary orbits. And to me, that's just amazing how everything is so precise, down to, you know, lightning breaking down nitrogen for plants to grow versus the plants in our solar system being, the stars being just the right distance that everything can work just so, is, to me, is amazing. Psalm 19, David writes, "The heavens declare the glory of God, and the firmament shows his handiwork." And he writes again, Psalm 103, "For as the heavens are high above the earth, so great is his mercy toward those who fear him." His mercy toward those who fear him is as great as the height of the heavens. And when you look at that comparison to trillions of miles between billions of stars, it's awe-inspiring and shows just how incomprehensible it really is for us to try to wrap our heads around our universe, much less God and his love for us. Some centuries later, Isaiah would write in Isaiah 40, verse 25, To whom then will you liken me? Or whom shall I be equal, says the Holy One? Lift up your eyes on high and see who has created these things, who brings out their host by number. He calls them all by name. By the greatness of his might and the strength of his power, not one is missing. The last section of my lesson this evening, we will look very briefly at the question that comes up with this, is where did life come from? To try and explain the complexity, not only of the universe, but also life, Big Bang proponents are left to come up with even more theories to try and prove their other theories, to prove another theory. One such theory that I've heard more recently than others is the multiple universe theory. This theory states that there are infinite number of universes and that every possible combination or set of conditions will have occurred. And we just happen to be living in a universe that's exactly right for our planet to exist in the way that it does and for the evolution of life. Firstly, there is no evidence for this at all. There's none. There's no scientific evidence, and this is truly blind faith. Secondly, it all would still need to be finely tuned for each universe to get started, which to me multiplies the necessity to have a creator whenever you add an infinite number of universes that you believe happened out of nothing. But thirdly, this theory has another flaw, and that is mind-boggling to me that they accept, because you have to accept it to believe this theory, that if every possible version of the universe has been created, then you can explain away anything. Anything you could possibly dream up has happened. There's a universe out there where everything is the same, except every person on planet Earth looks just like David. They all look the same, except all their hair is green, and everybody has three arms. That is a little ridiculous, but that is what that theory also suggests. They have to have a theory that wild in order to promote their other theories. You can also explain away anything that happens with this theory. The Holocaust. You can't really be upset with Hitler because of the Holocaust. Because after all, this may be the very universe where the Jews actively conspired with Hitler and willingly walked into the gas chambers of their own free will and starved themselves to the tune of millions of lives. It logically does not make sense, yet these are the links they have to go to in order to try and prove their own theories. So where did life come from? Naturalists, that would be evolutionists, materialists, humanists, atheists, and Darwinists, believe that life was created from non-life by non-life. In other words, just as with the universe, there was no living thing that created it, no intelligent design, and that there was no other life used in order to create it. All things evolved, which doesn't explain how the first life came to be, but once that's there, all things evolved from the single-celled amoeba by a process of macroevolution. One famous phrase that I find humorous that is used to describe this is it's been called from the goo to you via the zoo. And that's basically what it is. They believe that everything came from one single-celled amoeba, and over the process of however many billions of years through macroevolution, evolved into what we have today. Without getting lost in an hour of scientific studies, there's no evidence for this macro evolution that I have found, that there is micro evolution. So when people propose that, you know, Christians don't believe in evolution, it really depends on what you're speaking to there. There is such thing as microevolution. This would be an example. This would be when dog breeds change over time. Not even with the same breed, they can change drastically even within half a century. And this is also why when you look at the DNA, all dogs can be linked back to, you know, older wolves of ancient times. Even small dogs, they all have common ancestors. They have just been in various climates and bred in certain ways over thousands of years. but they have been and always will be dogs. They've never been anything except dogs. We have not had dogs give us anything else except more dogs. And it's the same with anything else. There are many examples of this. Microevolution is small changes, sometimes over short periods of time, but they can be observed. Macroevolution is speculated that is accomplished by lots of microevolutions over vast amounts of time, which would lead to new species. This is a theory that is touted because it is required by atheists to explain how life came to be the way that it is. However, it's not something that can be tested in a lab. And it's not something that can be observed. It's just another jump in the amount of faith required to be an atheist purely because you do not like the logical conclusion. Same with natural selection. While this is a real occurrence, it does not create new life. It doesn't create new types of creatures. Life is incredibly complex. If you think of a car engine, you decide you want to upgrade the pistons, you want to go to the you find the largest pistons you can find, say, I want to use these in my car. You can't just change out the piston size. First off, they won't fit, but even if they, if you were to cram them in there, it would just be a hunk of scrap metal. It couldn't function. You also have to change out the engine block, camshaft, cooling system, potentially the engine compartment. Many things would have to be changed for that to be a viable working machine again. And that goes the same with life. For a new species to be created that's completely different from another, you can't change just one thing and then it work. All these things have to change in order for it to still live. And that's not how life works, and there's no scientific evidence of this. And saying something so precise and so immensely complicated, even as a single-celled amoeba was created by no intelligent designer, is ludicrous. No one who ever saw the Grand Canyon no one saw the Grand Canyon when it was formed, but we can be confident that it was due to water erosion. That theory can be tested. We have modern evidence of it happening as well. There's not a question in anyone's mind when they see Mount Rushmore that even if you gave it the same amount of time that it may have taken for the Grand Canyon, depending on what you listen to on that as well, to be formed by water, there's no one who thinks Mount Rushmore was formed that way by wind, even over the same proposed amount of time. It obviously was designed by an intelligent being. Science is based on observation, and the theories required to attempt to prove the atheistic worldview are not science. If you were to pick up a radio frequency in space that included information that you could decipher and it was intelligent and you could understand what it was saying, you would conclude it came from an intelligent life somewhere. If you were in space and you looked out the window and you saw a watch floating by, you would assume that an astronaut, for some reason, had left a watch in space. You wouldn't assume that it was just another after product of the Big Bang. Francis Crick, co-discoverer of DNA and a Darwinist, stated that he agreed with Richard Dawkins that biologists must constantly keep in mind that these things are not designed but evolved. Now, why must they constantly keep this in their minds? Because it is so glaringly obvious something else is going on. Yet the narrative that is cast is it is a battle between religion and science, the Bible and science. It's a battle between God and science, and that is simply not the case. The battle is between good science and bad science. Michael Denton, microbiologist, biochemist, and also an atheist, once stated that the complexity of the simplest known type of cell is so great that it is impossible to accept that such an object could have been thrown together suddenly by some kind of freakish, vastly improbable event. Such an occurrence would be indistinguishable from a miracle. Richard Lewontin, evolutionary biologist and Darwinist, had this to say about the importance of accepting the irrational. Our willingness to accept scientific claims that are against common sense is the key to an understanding of the real struggle between science and the supernatural. We take the side of science in spite of the patent absurdity of some of its extravagant promises of health and life, in spite of the tolerance of the scientific community for unsubstantiated just-so stories, because we have a prior commitment to materialism. It is not that the methods and institutions of science somehow compel us to accept a material explanation of the phenomenal world, but, on the contrary, we are forced by our a priori adherence to material causes to create an apparatus of investigation and a set of concepts and produce material explanations, no matter how counterintuitive, no matter how mystifying to the uninitiated. In the last sentence here, moreover, that materialism is absolute, for we cannot allow a divine foot in the door. In a nutshell, they're willing to change the very definition of science and how it works, and defy their own conclusions to make sure that the reality of an intelligent design is not even brought to the table for discussion. So when you compare atheism and theism, atheism of the two is the one that is more established on what you might call blind faith. The obvious reality of a creator, and even the scientific community's own scientific objectivity, is often rejected just because saying that there was a creator, without even specifying a religion of any kind, sounds too much like religion. So all logical conclusions are traded for illogical to cope with that reality. As I close my thoughts, I hope this has been helpful in some way. We mentioned Robert Jastrow earlier, and I'd like to conclude with another quote from him and then another passage of scripture. Mr. Jastrow, he was employed for NASA, and he was an agnostic as well. He wrote, "For the scientist who has lived by his faith in the power of reason, the story ends like a bad dream. He has scaled the mountains of ignorance. He is about to conquer the highest peak. As he pulls himself over the final rock, he is greeted by a band of theologians who have been sitting there for centuries." Romans chapter 1 and verse 20. "For since the creation of the world, his invisible attributes are clearly seen, being understood by the things that are made, even his eternal power and Godhead, so that they are without excuse." We are naturally a questioning species, and God has given us the answers in nature for those questions. We are without excuse for not believing and seeking him out. And the excuse, "I didn't see proof," will not stand in judgment. I question in that moment if we would even be able to propose such a thought when we are in the presence of our Creator and with the reality of our own lives in front of us. It's the conclusion of my thoughts this afternoon. I hope that it was intelligible and that it was something that was beneficial in some way. We never want to close the service without offering the gospel invitation. If there's anyone who is a member of the body of Christ and like the prayers on their behalf, we'd be more happy to assist you in that. If you have never been baptized for the remission of sins, we would be more than happy and very excited to assist you in that as well, if you would come while we stand and while we sing.